Okay, so we're gonna get started with the Serenity Prayer, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. My name is Linda Brown, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
My name is Roxanne Whitney, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And we are starting on page 17. There is a solution.
Yep, that's
where
we are.
And so, I have here next to you, there is a solution, and then I have equals God. The solution equals God. It's not the steps yet. Right now, the solution is God, but we'll get to God through the steps. But the other thing I've noted about this particular page is that this whole page is about a picket fence, a tribe, a fellowship, a group of people that you are accountable to, a home group. That's what they're talking about on this page. And if you can find that in Overeaters Anonymous, you are a very lucky individual. I think that's part of our grace. So we are people who normally would not mix. That's a line right in the center of the second paragraph. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. And I found that here. That's been my experience.
And when this was written in 1938, the Titanic, which happened in 1912, was in very clear in people's memory. And the Lusitania was sunk in 1915, and that was really clear in people's memory, the concept of a shipwreck and everybody's in the water, and it didn't matter whether you were the captain or in steerage.
Right.
But then at the bottom of that paragraph, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for us, For every one of us, is that we have discovered a common solution, and the common solution is power,
God-given power. Absolutely. On the next page, right in the center, the second sentence of that first paragraph: if a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase that list. And that's true. That's so true for us as compulsive overeaters. How often people have said to me, why can't you just stop eating?
Why don't you stop going to OA and just try Jenny Craig?
Yeah. You know, if you got back into, if you really, like, followed the doctrine of the Catholic Church, is my mom throws holy water on me as I'm walking in and out of the door. You know, but for my mom, that's what she needs. My mom needs to be a Catholic. And I did all that, and it didn't change. It didn't change. I just kept making wreckage.
And the fourth paragraph on, we're still on page 18, but the ex-problem eater who has found this
God
solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another compulsive overeater in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So it doesn't matter to be lectured by your doctor. Oh my gosh, how many times did my doctor told me, you've got to lose some weight. You're going to have to start taking diabetes medication and blood pressure medication. But I couldn't hear it until I could hear it. And I heard it from my, I was going to a gym where guys in the back were using steroids. And I brought my daughter there. It was before gyms had daycare. And I brought my daughter there with her Barbie to sit with the guys and the needles, because for me it was more important to work out. And the guy who was training me 12-stepped me into Overeaters Anonymous. When I asked him one more time about how many hours of working out equaled how many calories, he finally said, you know, you're really sick and you need a program, Overeaters Anonymous. And I had heard of AA, and I was about to enter into AA. I came into AA and OA on the same day. It was a bad day. Anyway, it was a good day. It was an excellent day.
All right.
The top of page number 19 in the middle of the second paragraph.
We feel that the elimination of our... Now, the book says drinking. What I like to do here is, and I have a note here, excuse my language, but it just says, pick the one thing that's kicking your ass, man. Whatever it is that's beating you down, whether it's, the exercise bulimia. Okay, I'm going to eat a cheeseburger. The cheeseburger has 1,000 calories, so I got to run on the treadmill for, 1,000 calories. If it's the Smarties or if it's the tequila, pick that thing and put it here. We feel that the elimination of our compulsive overeating is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs.
So what he's saying is, we need help in coping with life. Our food, our problem isn't food. That's just what it looks like on the outside. The truth is that we aren't coping with our homes, our occupation, and our all of our affairs. And then the next page is page number 20, in the middle of the second paragraph. If you are a compulsive overeater who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do?
It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done. Before going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them.
And basically, now Bill goes into a description of different kinds of alcoholics, and we just want to add our little version of compulsive overeaters on the top of page 21.
Okay, right? Really quick right here, that we're in that in the third paragraph on page 20, one more time, why can't you just stop eating? Why can't you go to church? That it says, why, I can leave it alone, why can't he? What, that fellow can't handle his pizza. Why don't you try sprouted rye bread instead of wheat? Lay off the pepperoni pizza. And I love this line where it says the doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. And there he is all lit up again. And I always think, and there I am in that buffet line one more time.
And then the top of page 21, if a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome, and may even need medical attention. But the best diet for me, and I think the best diet for Linda Brown, is the love diet. Mm-hmm. If I fell in love, I could actually lose weight because I would just stop eating. And all the different diets that we tried, I have a whole list.
Right.
But the truth is, Bill is describing to us what it looks like to be an alcoholic, for me, a compulsive overeater.
Right.
We're still on page 21, in the third paragraph. He's telling us what kind of crazy stuff we did when we were compulsively eating. He does. Mm. He does absurd.
Oh, right. He does absurd, incredibly tragic things while drinking. He is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is more or less insanely drunk.
Insanely stuffed.
Stuffed.
Like
right.
Stuffed. And basically, when I used to pick my kids up from school before they got a driver's license and could escape me, I would pick them up, they'd get in the car, and they'd be kind of quiet, and I realized after a couple of years, they were trying to figure out who I was that day. Whether or not I was grumpy, whether or not I was angry, whether or not I was in the mood to take them to the liquor store so they could get some candy. It depended on how guilty I was feeling, right? So basically, I was more or less of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, depending on how much I had eaten, because I was filled with self-hatred.
The line that talks and gives the description of becoming dangerously antisocial reminds me of, in my disease, one of my most favorite things to do. I was a new mom. I had a baby. She was less than a year old, and my husband worked at night. He'd leave at 2:00 in the afternoon and not come home until 10:30 or 11. And I couldn't wait for the sun to go down so that I could have all the lights off in the house and have the TV on, and I'd have the baby asleep in the other room. And I would buy the max pack of Oreos. And, there's 10 rows of Oreos. I can tell you, I can see the box. It's right here. And the rows are this high. And one big glass of milk. And I would go into the living room, all the lights off, just the blue glow from the television. And every night I'd sit there and I'd eat a row. And then as I saw that the rows were diminishing, I'd go to the grocery store, go to the Max Pack aisle, buy another box, and replace them, and then throw the cardboard box away so my husband didn't know that that's what was happening nightly, mowing through the Oreos.
Mowing is a key word there.
Right.
And at the bottom, just about two sentences up from the bottom of the page, we're still on page 21. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except food. But in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities. Oh, my gosh. I have so many special abilities. Oh, my gosh.
Skills and aptitudes.
And
aptitude. Don't forget the nose.
And I have a promising career ahead of me, and yet my life just implodes. Okay, we're on page 22.
About third sentence down. As matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedatives and liquor to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. So, right. Exercise, the Oreos in the morning or at night and the exercise the next day. Like, I've got to find a balance. There's always this balance. Well, I'm going to have one of those frozen Weight Watcher meals or a Lean Cuisine so that I can eat the Oreos. It makes sense. Or I'll starve all day. I will eat nothing all day so I can eat those Oreos at night. And it's going to be the same amount of calories had I eaten three meals, right?
Yeah, and I'll take diet pills. Oh. Thank you. I forgot to correct the street word for that.
I didn't know diet pills were speed.
To cope with the diet pills, you have to be able to get sleeping pills. So, and that's a kind of an interesting combination when you have little kids. So, okay. So, the next place we're going to start reading on page 22 is in the third paragraph in the middle, and it says, what has become, right?
Yes.
What has become of the common sense and willpower that he still sometimes displays in respect to other matters? Mowing lawns, totally, I've got it nailed.
Still going to work, still getting a paycheck?
Still, yes. I never lost a car. I never missed a house payment. I never got divorced. I never cheated on my husband.
Ugh.
Freaking miracle.
So
it's not a miracle
angelic.
Now, but it was a miracle then, because he's awesome. But anyway.
I'm a big cheater.
Okay. And then in the middle of the bottom paragraph, it says, we cannot answer the riddle. And the riddle he's talking about is, what the heck happened? We were able to control our food. We were able to control our weight. And then all of a sudden, one day we weren't. I can tell you right now, the one day I wasn't was February 14th, 1986. I was no longer able to control and enjoy my eating. And it was like, what? What? I didn't even see that coming. And so the most important thing on this page is, instead of wondering why, like, and then I decided going to therapy, will it tell me why I can't control? And then I'll get it, and then I'll be able to figure out my food, and I'll be able to control and enjoy my food. But no, that didn't actually work, because something happened to me. I was broken, and the thinking of figuring out why didn't work. It didn't change the way I was eating. It just made me really smart about what I wasn't doing right. I don't know. Okay.
Right. Yeah. There, at the top of page 23, the first paragraph, second sentence. Therefore, the main problem of the compulsive overeater centers in his mind rather than in his body.
And if you ask him why he started on that last binge, the chances are he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. But the truth is, he doesn't have a clue why. I have no idea why I started eating the whatever I have a problem with, whatever that is. Like, for me today, it's probably Wheat Thins. Wheat Thins are probably not a happy food for me. In the middle of the page.
Right, middle of the page. This is the start of step one in the big book as it's described. Once in a while, he may tell the truth. And the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first compulsive bite than you have. Some drinkers, some compulsive overeaters have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time. But in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they are down for the count. How true this is, few realize. In a vague way, their families and friends sense that these compulsive overeaters are abnormal, but everybody hopefully awaits the day when the sufferer will arouse himself from his lethargy and assert the power of will.
The tragic truth is that if this man be a real compulsive overeater, the happy day may not arrive. He has lost control. At a certain point of each compulsive eater of every compulsive overeater, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop eating is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected.
The fact.
Are we going to read that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
Oh, no. Are we not?
We'll read the. I like reading everything in italics because I think if Bill put it in italics,
okay.
It's important. So, the fact is that most compulsive overeaters, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in food. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first compulsive bite. I can remember going on a work event, like a team building event or a summer picnic, and we went to Knott's Berry Farm, and I was almost 300 pounds, and I couldn't get into the thing, and the guy was shoving it down to get me to fit in there, and all my coworkers are, you know, in the roller coaster cars in front of me and behind me, and I thought, that's it, I am done being this big, and that was it. That was the only time I thought that, like, in that part of my life, that was the only time I thought, that's it, I'm done being this big. I can guarantee you that I have no memory of going on a diet the next day or, you know, starving myself or anything like that. I just went on with my life exactly the way I had before that guy was trying to shove me into that roller coaster.
Yeah, and then the next paragraph at the bottom of the paragraph, we're still on page 24. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. So no matter how many times I bang on the counter in my kitchen and say, what the heck? Why did I eat that? Whether it's Smarties or for me, glazed donuts, whatever it is for you, no amount of pain of memory of doing that yesterday changes my behavior today. That's what he's talking about when he talks about putting his hand on a hot stove. And then in the middle of the next paragraph, in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth glazed donut, pounding on the bar and saying to ourselves, for God's sake, how did I get started again? Only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I might as well eat a dozen, because that's how many I bought.
Or I'll stop after half a row. I'll stop at half a row of Oreo cookies.
I'll stop at a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies. Okay, so here we go. We're getting close to there as a solution. The top of page 25. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. What he's saying is what we got here. So many want to stop but cannot, but there is a solution.
Right. There is a solution. Almost none of us, like, we're going to read this entire page just so everybody knows, page 25. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet.
The
and this is the promise of step one. There was nothing left for us to pick up but to pick up a simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way in which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves.
if we are as seriously compulsive overeater as we were, if you are as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help.
This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort.
Okay, now, so basically this, we, he's mentioned here, see the, what are those little stars called?
Asterisk.
Asterisk. The asterisk in the middle of page 25 refers to the appendix, and we'll read the appendix the next time it's mentioned, because he mentions it three times here, and it's the spiritual experience appendix, but we're going to read it later. The next paragraph is talking about he is talking about a guy whose name was Roland Hazard. He was a really wealthy guy from Rhode Island, but somehow he knew Ebbie Thatcher. So we're going to, Roland Hazard, his parent, he was a drunk, and his parents spent a bunch of money and sent him to Zurich, where Carl Jung had a clinic for crazy people. And Carl Jung treated Roland Hazard for a full year for his alcoholism. And Roland Hazard checked out. He was thrilled because he was clean and sober a year. And he left, and then he came back 2 weeks later and he said, holy crap, I drank. What's wrong with me? I spent a whole year, my parents paid a crap load of money, and I drank again. And so that's the first part of the paragraph there. And telling, you know, he says it better, but that's pretty much the story. And so he returns to Dr. Jung, whom he admired, and he asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain his self-control. He sensed he seemed quite rational and well-balanced with every respect of and to other problems, and yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. I relate to that over food. Why was this? He's asking Carl Jung, and Dr. Carl Jung says that to him.
He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. He could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion.
Okay, so Carl Jung said, there's no hope for you.
And Roland Hazard
comes back to him and said, no, that can't be right. That can't be right. Are you sure there's not another? There's door number B.
Is there no exception, he says, in the middle of that paragraph. And then he says, yes, Dr. Jung tells him. Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, compulsive overeaters have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are a phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. In fact, I have been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangement within you. With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful, but I have never been successful with a compulsive overeater of your description. And then we get the asterisk again to go to appendix number 2, which is page 567, which is appendix spiritual experience. So if you want to go to the back of your book, if you have your book, we'll read that really quick.
Okay, so we're on page 567. This is the fourth edition of the big book. If you have another edition, we're really confusing you today.
Sorry.
But this is a spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, and upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, compulsive overeating, has manifested itself among us in many different forms. He's talking about whether the Bill's white light, his white light experience where God comes to him immediately, or more common experience is that it's incremental and educational. My experience, my personal relationship with God has happened over time, over 26, 27 years.
Yes, it is true that at our first printing, our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics and or compulsive overeaters have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. So, he, don't panic. That's what they're writing here. Don't panic.
What
it's
he's
coming.
Looking for is change, any kind of change. And the way he said the word change many different ways. In the first paragraph, he actually says personality change. And then he says personality change again. Religious experiences, sudden and spectacular upheavals. That's another word for change. Sudden revolutionary changes, overwhelming God consciousness, vast change in feeling and outlook. This is all a different way of saying the same thing. Change. Like, that could be the whole appendix. Change your mind. Just change your mind. It'll happen if you change your mind. And embrace the concept that you need a power greater than yourself, and it's available to you.
Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of compulsive overeaters, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource with which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves.
And then the second to the last paragraph, most enthusiastically, we wish to say that any compulsive overeater capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, open-mindedness, and honesty are the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable.
Absolutely necessary. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Thank God that goes away.
Okay, and so we're back on page 27 at the very bottom of the page. We finished that, and that's where the appendix is, the note to go and see it. Now we're on page 28 at the top of the page.
We're going to read that entire second paragraph. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or, if you prefer, a design for living that really works. The distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book, Varieties of Religious Experiences, indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Those having religious affiliations will find there here nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There is no friction among us over such matters.
So what he's saying is, when you come into program, nobody's going to argue with you being a Lutheran or a Catholic. Nobody's going to throw that at you, because that isn't what we're about.
Or an agnostic or an atheist. We just want you to find a power greater than yourself, or, in my experience, a God that I could do business with, because I'd had a Catholic God, I'd had a Seventh-day Adventist God, I'd had a Baptist God and a Jehovah's Witness God, and I couldn't do business with those gods. For I'm broken there. And I can say that I'm broken there. I did my inventory. I know that I was broken there. But somehow, the steps were the miracle that helped me build that God that I could do business with, and hopefully you can do that too.
Yeah. Because I need to, just like Linda said, I need to find a God I can do business with. And today, my God loves me so much, he can't take his eyes off me. And I need to have that. I need to have a God who adores me when I make not so healthy food choices, when I, whatever, don't exercise, when I don't, God forbid, take my dogs for a walk. Oh, my God. Whatever. I need to find a God who loves me no matter what. Because this is a program about self-love. If you can't get that here, and I get that from my loving God.
The first complete sentence on step 29 says...
Page 29, sorry.
Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Directions. Follow directions. Take the steps.
And they're not suggestions. Right. Each individual, the next paragraph in the personal story, describes in his own language and form and from his own point of view the way he established a relationship with God. Okay, now, I have to tell you that when I read the book, Overeaters Anonymous, the chocolate book, it used to be called, I don't know
chocolate
what it's called
book.
Now.
I love that.
But
chocolate.
When I read the stories in this book, in the back of a big book, it never occurred to me that they were stories about how they established their relationship with God. I had no idea. Nobody said, hey, this is how. I thought it was how they controlled and enjoyed their food. I thought it was how they stopped drinking. I had no idea that that's so. It really helps that he's telling you that's what these stories are about.
Right.
Okay.
I think the second to the last sentence on this page. Our hope is that many compulsive overeating men and women desperately in need will see these pages and will believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing.
Okay, so that is the end of There Is a Solution. And the solution, I just want to recap in case we weren't clear. The solution is a power greater than yourself. The solution is God, and however that, whatever that looks like to you. And just before, we forgot to say we're going to do a break at 3:25. Yes. At 3:25, we're going to do a break because we're supposed to go till 5. We won't be going till 5 because both of us our hair will start on fire. Okay. But we're going to have a break at 3 something, maybe before that.
Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. This step 1 is right here in the middle of this paragraph. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his eating is the great obsession of every abnormal eater. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And here's the first step. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were compulsive overeaters. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed.
And then the second sentence in the next paragraph. All of us felt at times that we were regaining power, we were regaining control. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We were convinced to a man that compulsive overeaters of this type, of our type, are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. I'm much, much worse. I'm much more of a horrible, sick, compulsive overeater today than I was in 1986.
Yeah.
We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones.
Okay, so if you have sticky notes here, this is what I did for page 31. We're going to read the second full paragraph all the way.
So it starts with here is?
Right. It starts with here are. Right.
Okay, here are.
Okay, so here are some of the methods we have tried. So we're going to list our methods. So you get to list
your
methods.
So this is what it looks like in my book.
Right.
I type them because I can't read my own handwriting. And so basically,
here are some of the methods we have tried.
So everybody has their own stuff that they've done. But so write yours in when you get home and tape it in. The brown rice, a macrobiotic diet, 1969. Fasting, AIDS. They used to have this stuff called AYDS, and it's,
nuggets, it's not chewy, other something AIDS. Yummy.
Yeah. I had this great food plan for 2 years. It was the corn tortilla, cheese, green apple, tequila diet.
It's my favorite one. Excellent. My favorite one. It's the best one.
Excellent.
It sounds so good. I think maybe no.
I actually met my husband on that diet, and he was convinced that I was the one. Yes.
Oh, my God.
The low-carbohydrate diet, Herbalife, Ultra Slim Fast, Sego, Metrical, Lean Cuisine, Dexatrim. Diet pills, just eating sugar. I thought, okay, I'm done with protein. I have had it with protein. I'm just going to, all my calories are going to be sugar-based calories. For a couple years, I did Gray Sheet, the How Food Plan. Not eating breakfast, not eating dinner, vomiting, laxatives, compulsive exercising, antihistamines, smoking cigarettes, dancing, walking, weight training, personal trainers. Okay.
All right, and I read my list earlier when I answered one of those
again.
Questions, but I'm going
to
read it again. Okay, the number one, my number one is alcohol only. The Hollywood diet, gastric bypass, Sensa, Slim Fast, lemon and water, Master Cleanser, Starving, Weight Watchers, Atkins, Bikram Yoga, walking, yoga,
Spin
class, swimming, you name it. When it comes to exercise, I've tried it. When I got here, it was chili cheese Fritos and double shot light espressos from Starbucks. That was like
the food plan.
That was the food plan. Those two things. If I bought that stores like the big size of chili cheese Fritos. And I grazed on that, and then the double shot lights. That was my last diet, the double shot lights and the chili cheese Fritos. I knew I was going to lose weight.
How could you not love Linda Brown?
I knew I was going to lose weight if I ate that.
Okay, so after that's our list. And so the bottom paragraph on page 31, what he's saying is, step over to the nearest fast food
buffet.
And try some controlled eating. Try one donut and try to stop abruptly.
Right.
And put whatever food is in there, chili cheese fries.
Right.
Page number 32, top of the page. It will not take long for you to decide if you're honest with yourself about it.
Right. And that's the first step. It's about admitting to your innermost self and being honest with yourself. It doesn't matter what I tell you. It's what I know is going on inside of me. So.
Okay, so we're skipping over to page 23, second paragraph in the middle of the...
33, sorry.
Sorry, 33. In the middle of the second paragraph.
Once a compulsive overeater, always a compulsive overeater.
There was a guy in a meeting that I used to go to, that I don't go to anymore, who's in another program, but he'd say, I am a pickle. I am a cucumber that's become pickled, and pickles can't go back to being cucumbers. And I am I'm a pickle. I can't go back to becoming a normal eater. That's just not who I am.
There must be no reservation of any kind nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to compulsive overeating.
And then all the way at the bottom of the page.
Is particular.
Yeah,
right?
Like about maybe...
Last paragraph, second sentence.
Right. This is particularly true of women. Potential female compulsive overeaters often turn into the real thing and are long gone beyond recall in a few years. And my experience, just my experience, is that there are a lot of women in Overeaters Anonymous, and the reason why is because of the level of self-hatred around food and weight lack of acceptance in body image. But that's true for me. That's just my experience. Okay, page 34.
The second sentence. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try. And then again, put your sticky note here. This says try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. I don't know, try leaving sugar alone for a year and then going back to eating it normally. If that's your thing, try not getting on the treadmill and looking at the numbers. I don't know, whatever your thing is, try it for a year. If you don't think you belong in Overeaters Anonymous, go out and do make a plan and say, I'm going to do this plan for 365 days and see what happens.
In the bottom, the last sentence in the paragraph.
We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be compulsively overeating the day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks.
And then the note I have here in my book is that character does not help. Oh.
Many of us felt that we had plenty of character.
Yeah.
That's why it says that.
There you go. Okay, yeah, that's the sentence in the middle of the next paragraph.
There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is a baffling feature of compulsive overeating as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone no matter how great the necessity or the wish.
And then at the top of page 35, the first sentence. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into compulsive overeating, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. And then Bill tells three stories about these are about alcoholics, and the stories don't actually work, except for the Jim story is kind of interesting because he's talking about, we're not going to read this because it's kind of long, but he's talking about a guy who sells cars for a living. And he used to own the dealership that he works at now, so there's one like resentment area. But he goes to a roadhouse, like a cafe, to looking for a guy to sell a car to, which is reasonable. It's kind of reasonable. And he orders a sandwich and a glass of milk. And we'll pick the story up on page 36, okay. Bottom sentence of that first paragraph.
By the way, he admits here that he remembers feeling irritated. So I can identify. Oh, yeah. I'm irritated 24/7 before I bring God into my life. I'm irritated 24/7. So I just thought I would get a sandwich, and I can't tell you how many times I thought I was just going to get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. No thought of more food, or whatever it is here. He says, no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk.
Okay.
So, first, we want to make sure that you understand that we believe, it's our opinion, that Jim is a compulsive overeater. Because if Jim can't go and have his one sandwich and one glass of milk and say, okay, I've had my meal, I'm out of here. No, he can't do that. So still no thought of drinking, I order another sandwich and decide to have another glass of milk.
And then we pick up the story in italics. Every time, I know that we said this, but in italics, if there's italics, you got to notice that. That's Bill's way of saying, hey,
right,
I'm saying something important.
Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into the milk, and I vaguely sensed I wasn't being any too smart, but I felt reassured as I was taking the whiskey on the full stomach. So when I hear Jim tell this, I go, well, I'm going to have just a serving of potato chips. I'm going to have my second sandwich and my second glass of milk, but I'm going to add some potato chips.
I'm going to have a glazed donut.
The
second sandwich.
Oh, well, and a serving of Oreos. And I'll get the box. I'll say, can you bring me the box?
Just bring the box.
So I can read what the serving size is. Okay, well, three is a serving, so can I have three Oreos? I know you want to give me five, and I'm going to pay for five, but just bring me three.
Okay, so the bottom of page 36, the last sentence. He had much knowledge, more squiggly writing. He had much knowledge about himself as a compulsive overeater, yet all reasons for not overeating were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take that whiskey, if only he mixed it with milk, that he could have the second sandwich. Whatever. Okay, so that's our first example is Jim. We like Jim. Okay, and then the next paragraph, the word in the middle of the paragraph is insanity.
Right.
Like it's clear,
plain
like
insanity.
Jim.
Stop.
You're crazy.
Right.
Okay. In the next paragraph, in the middle of the paragraph, it starts, but.
But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insane, trivial excuse for taking the first compulsive bite. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and serenity, how it could have happened.
Okay, on the very bottom of the page, the last paragraph, our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first compulsive bite as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Okay, now the thing about the jaywalker, this is the second example that Bill has of trying to get us to meet these people so we can identify. This part of the book is him showing us examples to see if we can get us to identify. And when I first read the jaywalker, I thought, what an idiot. However, that's just not my thing. I'm not a jaywalker. There's a reason why. I can't see. So like I have like, oh, wait a minute. I can't see. I won't be able to see anything coming, so I'm not jaywalking. However, jaywalking is a really good example for compulsive overeaters because it's like, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with alcohol. So you can maybe get into it a little more. It's a little bit easier.
And I think the common thread between Jim and the jaywalker is that eventually once we read the entire jaywalker story, you're going to see that the jaywalker believed the lie. And the lie is, it won't hurt me this time. I'm not going to get struck this time.
Exactly.
So, where did you start?
Having queer ideas of fun. So up to this point, you would label him a foolish. Now we're on the top of page 38. Chap, having queer ideas of having fun.
Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time, he has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs.
On through the years, his conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work, his wife gets a divorce, and he is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways, but the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he?
You think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit if we substituted compulsive overeating for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. So every time they've written jaywalker, I've written compulsive overeater. So however intelligent we may have been in other respects where compulsive overeating, where food had been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but it's true.
And then some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. I mean, that's the first time I read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I kept thinking, well, this doesn't apply to food. This is stupid. How am I supposed to read this to apply to food? But we admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extreme that you fellows did, nor are we likely to. For we understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again. Well, that's not my experience. I've gone to six marriage counselors, and I finally just accepted that I was a compulsive overeater alcoholic and started using the book and the steps to change my life and introduce me to a God of my understanding. Because my problem wasn't that I was not organized for life and that I was immature.
Mm-hmm.
My problem was that I didn't have a higher power, and that was my problem.
The last line, the last sentence on page 38, we have not. This is it. Some of you are thinking, this is what Bill's saying. Yeah, if you're reading this, you might be thinking, we have not lost everything through compulsive overeating, and I certainly don't intend to. Thanks for the information. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks. And then the next, halfway through the next paragraph, we're on page 39. But the actual or potential compulsive overeater, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop compulsively eating on the basis of self-knowledge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Fred, the CPA. Okay. I like the description of Fred, that he's so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. And to all appearances, he is stable, well-balanced individual, yet he is compulsive overeater or alcoholic.
So we're not going to read Fred's story because it's long, and let me just say that he fancies himself too. He goes to Washington. He presents something in front of a government body, and it turns out well. He's on his way home back to the hotel, and he decides he's going to go in to have dinner. He's looking forward to dinner, but wait, there's more. He gets drunk, and first of all, he gets drunk before he goes to Washington, and he meets Bill and Bob right before he goes on his second trip. And when he meets Bill and Bob, they say, gosh, you know, this is what we are. We're alcoholics. We're powerless over alcohol. And he said, yeah, I get that you guys are complete losers.
You skipped one page.
Oh, I skipped a page. You go, Linda.
You scared me.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Erase, reset.
So he meets Bill again, and he says, I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first compulsive bite, but I was confident it couldn't happen to me after what I had learned. I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, and that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. My example of keeping on guard is jumping on the scale every day, 3 times a day, and making sure that number doesn't go any higher. And if that number goes on higher, it goes up, I'm on guard. I got to do something about it. Guess what? I'm just going to starve for the rest of the day, not eating. I'm going to just chew gum compulsively. Let me get some gum. Let me get a Diet Coke, and I'm good to go.
Right. And also, if the chewing gum doesn't work, you can just hate yourself.
Sure.
Because it's like an incredibly effective weight loss tool.
So good.
And also, what friends
go out and get a date and then have them break up with you, and then you starve yourself. Another good one. I do that a lot.
But what Fred is saying here is that his case is different. Thank you so much, Bill and Bob, but really, my case is different. And that's, I really did not want to be a compulsive overeater. I wanted to be many things, but not a compulsive overeater. Okay, so he talks about going, okay, we're on 41 now. Do you want to do this?
I do. I want to do, but he went to his hotel room, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of bites for dinner.
Appetizers,
that was all. Nothing more. I'm going to go and get, so my sticky note says Sizzler.
I don't even know. That's all I have to say.
But because here's what I say. Oh, you know what? I'd rather go to the buffet than have a plated meal. Because if I have a plated meal, then you're controlling my portions and you're telling me what I can eat. If I go to the buffet, then I get to control it. And I say, okay, I'm gonna eat like 10 pounds of bell pepper, and then I can have coconut cream pie, right?
Yeah. So basically, Fred goes to. He's done this thing.
Sizzler.
He goes to Sizzler and he gets whatever. And the bottom paragraph, it says, because what it ends up is that Fred loses 3 days of his life and finally shows up and his wife picks him up.
His wife doesn't pick him up. Finds a driver. He's supposed to meet his wife at the airport, and then he gets there and some driver, he like has to get a driver because his wife is nowhere to be found because he was supposed to be there 3 days earlier.
Yeah.
So not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first bite. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all.
Okay.
Again, skates you.
Okay, we're on page 42. It was a crushing blow. Basically, the last sentence of the first paragraph, it was a crushing blow. He thought he had, because he was incredibly successful, and I love this part of the very beginning of Fred, he had promising children of college age. Like, why the heck does that help? I have promising children of college.
He didn't fail as a parent. That must mean he's pretty decent.
No,
he probably
wasn't involved.
His daughter was not on the stripper pole. I mean,
right.
Come on.
That's
she's
right.
Successful.
She wasn't pole dancing.
She's
okay.
Not a pole dancer. She's promising.
All right.
That means he's successful. If my kid isn't on the pole, I'm living large. I'm doing life right, right? That's how I think that's the measure of who I am.
It's an exchange
rate. I get Fred. I get that.
Okay. So we're on the second paragraph.
Second paragraph, just so you know, is Fred's first step. It's right here. He does his first step in this paragraph. Go ahead. Two members
of Alcoholics Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much. And then they asked me if I thought myself an alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. And they piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality, I have a compulsive overeater mentality, such as I had exhibited in Washington, was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen, and this process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself.
So here you get to decide, are you a compulsive overeater? Are you done?
And then at the very bottom of page 42, two sentences up from the bottom, But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, to go through with the process of being in Overeaters Anonymous and being a part of the program and working the steps, I had the curious feeling that my compulsive overeating condition was relieved, and in fact it proved to be.
And for me, every day is a surrender in OA. Every single day has to be a surrender in OA. In the very last line, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I've since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and, I hope, more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it even if I could.
This is the most badly quoted section of the book.
Absolutely.
Because people say, I wouldn't give up my life today for any... I wouldn't give my worst day today for the best day when I was eating, and that's crap. I'd give up my worst day today for my best day, but I wouldn't live the life. I wouldn't give up my life today for my life before.
Absolutely.
Bottom of the page.
Last paragraph, page 43. Once more... The compulsive overeater at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first bite. Except in few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Okay, so then we move straight from must come from a higher power to chapter 4, which is we agnostics. Hold on,
we're perfect on time.
Okay, so basically we agnostics, when we finish we agnostics, we're going to take our break. This is just going to take a minute. Okay.
Okay, and this chapter, I believe, separates people who will recover from those people who won't recover. And that's been my experience, because when I push God out, I cannot recover. So right in the third sentence of the first paragraph, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when compulsive eating, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably a compulsive overeater. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer.
And so if you have a newcomer that you're working with, and they say to you, because I don't know if you guys have had this happen, but I have, a newcomer comes to me and says, I'm not sure I'm a compulsive overeater. You just take them to this page number 44, and say, okay, that's all right. If you honestly want to, have you ever been able to quit entirely? Whatever it is, quit Girl Scout cookies entirely? Or when you eat Girl Scout cookies, can you stop at just two? You may have little control over the amount you take. You are probably a compulsive overeater. That's the truth for me. So if they aren't, then they aren't, and there's nothing I can do. But if they say, yeah, I can't stop without eating the whole box, then they're one of us.
There's hope right here in the last sentence of the second paragraph. To be doomed to a compulsive overeating death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And I know that doesn't sound very hopeful, but I believe that it is. Yeah. I believe that's the beginning of hope.
And then we're on page 45, second paragraph. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how do we find this power?
Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God.
And then all the way at the bottom of the page, we're still on page 45, in the middle of the last paragraph. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him, which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had with...
Nope, you skipped it. We imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly.
Okay, and then here. Last paragraph on page 46.
Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. That was so powerful for me because I couldn't, at the time, I couldn't do business with my Catholic, Seventh-day Adventist, Baptist, Jehovah's Witness God. I couldn't. I could not do business with that God when I first came here. So, again, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to the effect and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of, I love this, this is so significant for us compulsive readers, because here's a bunch of names that you can attach yourself to if you don't like the G word. Creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. We begin to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. To those who earnestly seek, it is open, we believe, to all men. And right here in that paragraph, you're no longer powerless. A new power, a God power, is starting to flow in right here.
On the top of page 47, when, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. And then,
honestly asking yourself, we skip a couple lines, honestly asking yourself what they mean to you, what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. The very last sentence in that paragraph. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. Again, a God you can do business with. Doesn't matter what God I'm doing business with. It's your God.
Yeah, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon the simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Oh, I'm so excited.
This is your thing.
That's my thing.
She drew a picture for me. I love it.
The cornerstone. So foundation was willingness. We talked about it in Bill's story. Mm-hmm. And then this is the cornerstone. The cornerstone is, Am I
belief in God?
Do I have a belief in God?
Right.
That's the cornerstone. And so, and then we start on.
So step two, are you willing to believe in God, believe in OA, believe in the rest of you? Like, I see it working in you. How can I not believe that? It's here. It's right here.
And so the next line that we read is the bottom line on the whole page. We're still on page 47. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice.
Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. So they're telling us, stop fighting, stop arguing, give it up. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with compulsive overeating destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, food was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness.
And then we're going to go to the middle of page 49, just one sentence. It's on the beginning of the third paragraph. We who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice even against organized religion. Beg is a strong word. Mm-hmm. So basically, he's just saying keep an open mind, and the more open your mind, the more available you are to have God come and help you.
One of the things that when they talk about religions, it says, we have learned whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. And that's true. I think that, the religion has as much of a success rate as Alcoholics Anonymous or Overeaters Anonymous, and it works for a lot of people. But here's what happened for me. When I went to church, the preacher, the minister, the priest, whoever it was, wasn't talking about Oreo cookies and he wasn't talking about Patron. But when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I came to Overeaters Anonymous, everybody talked about tequila and everybody talked about Oreos. And I knew that's what I needed. That's the message that I needed to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole concept of this chapter is for us to identify with the conflict that we have about accepting a higher power and to go with what he's begging us to do is just have an open mind. I'm on page 50 in the middle of the first paragraph.
Such a good line. We miss the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing.
At the bottom of the last paragraph of page number 59.
This is the promise of step two.
They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power, and to do certain simple things, he's talking about the steps, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking.
The last sentence on page 51 of the first paragraph, when many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Fake it till you make it. I heard that so often when I was new. And even having been in a 12-step program for a few years before coming to OA, my first three meetings, I wouldn't say I was a compulsive overeater. They would go around the whole room and introduce themselves. And I'd go, yeah, Linda Brown, I don't know what I'm doing here. And that's the first three meetings I went to. I didn't want to buy in to being a compulsive overeater. I wanted so badly not to have one more thing that I had to give up because I'd already felt like I'd given it all up already. And a lady came up to me and said, hey, why don't you just fake it till you make it? And I thought, oh, she got me. She got me right there. And then I knew in my next meeting, I said, I started from that moment on identifying as a compulsive overeater. And I related. I related to what was going on.
Okay, we're on page 51 in the exact middle of the page, in the middle of the paragraph. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. And basically what he's talking about here is, so this is the chapter on we agnostics, and Bill is trying to write a chapter that convinces us of the existence of a higher power. Right. And I just think, go, Bill.
Yeah.
Like the Bible didn't do it, so he's going to write a chapter that I think is so effective and so powerful because he basically is starting to build a case, like a legal case, mm-hmm. for the fact that there is a higher power. And he starts by talking about Columbus and Columbus's belief that there was a new world. Columbus believed it. He believed it. He gets money from Queen Isabella. He who needs it to Al-Anon. He gets on his boat. He goes. Everybody says, oh, flat. The earth is flat. You're going to go off the edge. And he says, no. He had a belief. So he's talking about this belief and how strong that belief was. And so he gets Columbus gets to the New World. And then he talks about the airplane, the first flight at Kitty Hawk, and how even though all the professors and all the people who were teaching at Harvard and Yale and all the Columbia told everyone, okay, flight, not possible. It's not going to happen. These two guys who built bicycles decided they were going to try to make a plane. And so he's basically saying, let go of all your ideas of what you think. Let go and try this idea.
One of my favorite quotes that's not in the big book is, and I'm going to misquote it, and I'm going to probably not give the proper credit because my husband talks, my husband used to be a circuit speaker, and he talks a lot. And he always used to say, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And I so got that. I so, like, whatever I believe is what I'm going to manifest in my life. And when he starts talking about Columbus and Kitty Hawk, and he goes into, you know, the whole lunar flight thing, like, he's talking about mental open-mindedness. Like, there was this mental open-mindedness that absolutely somebody's going to take a rocket ship, there's going to be a shuttle, and you're going to be able to go to the moon. So if you can muster mental open-mindedness, why can't you muster spiritual open-mindedness? Why can't you shift that perception and create spiritual open-mindedness?
Right. Okay, now, so we're on page 52 now.
This is my Groupon story.
Oh, yeah. Go with your Groupon story.
I like to talk about this only because it says, like, it talks, this is before, this is, now, mind you, this was written in 1938-39. This is before the space shuttle, right? This is before anybody goes to the moon, and they're thinking, yeah, I bet they do it. So if they can think that, like, today I believe that by the time my daughter is my age in another 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Groupon to orbit the moon. I totally believe that. Like, I can get a Groupon right now to, you know, get my eyebrows waxed for $7. Why? I can't shut my mind closed anymore on spiritual matters. And I think that this really helps me get that mental open-mindedness towards the towards spiritual matters.
Okay, now on page 52, he kind of is giving us, so the way he constructs this chapter is he's saying, look, believe in God, really, 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 you got to do it. Just open your mind, do it. And then he throws something in the middle of this page number 52, and this paragraph, the third paragraph,
the bedevilment,
is called the bedevilments in AA. People refer to this as the bedevilments, okay? And so I think he's throwing this in just in case we're, our minds are closing again.
Right. This is a description of me, in case you are wondering. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had feelings of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was this not a basic solution of these bedevilments, more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was.
And then the next paragraph, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Okay, so page number 53, the middle of the page.
Right. Well, I like the line that says, logic is great stuff. We like it and we still like it. I think we need to really say, hey, we're not saying, a lot of times you hear people go, dummy down. And, you know, I don't want to be dummy down. I don't want to throw away everything, you know, that has been useful, but I absolutely want to remain open to what could become more useful to me.
Yeah.
So the, second paragraph, when we became compulsive overeaters, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? One more chance giving you an opportunity to believe.
And the other way that that Bill attacks this, that the writers of the big book attack this, is basically, if you don't believe in God, go back and reread this. That's kind of how he attacks this. If I'm having trouble with step 7, which is kind of the step that I have the most trouble with, if I'm having trouble with step 7, I need to go back to step 6. I need to go back to step 5. If I'm still not, like, nailing and feeling really like I'm working this whatever step it is, I need to back up a little bit. And what he's saying is, okay, back up. Do you believe now? I've given you my pitch. Bill's given us his pitch about why we should be open and believe in God. And then we are at page 54.
Right. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life.
That's the third paragraph. And then we're moving over to page 55, top of the page.
Ugh. Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by, and put whatever you want here, but it may be obscured by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself.
And then the next paragraph, halfway through, we found the great reality deep down within us. At the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found, capital he may be found. It was so with us.
We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of our belief is sure to come to you.
And then the page 56, middle of the page, the exact middle of the page. If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. And he's talking about one night when, this is Bill.
Right.
When Bill was in the hospital, when he was hospitalized for the last time, and Eddie comes to see him in the hospital, but before that, he's in the hospital, and he says, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering this answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came to him. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God?
In a few seconds, okay, so this is the middle of his fifth step. In the few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. It poured over him, through him, and with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood at the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. And for me, that happened right in the middle of my fifth step on my sponsor's couch, and I started sobbing like a baby.
And so this is Bill's example of his white light experience.
Oh, here comes more building materials.
Yes.
Thus was our friend's cornerstone fixed in place.
Okay, and so the cornerstone is that I am the child and he is my father. That's the cornerstone, but he hasn't really told us that yet, but that's coming. That's coming in the next chapter, but that's the cornerstone is that he believes in God.
Right. The very last paragraph on page 57, even so has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us.
So he's telling us we're finished with that chapter, we're finished with We Agnostics, and basically he's telling us to have an open mind and find a God that you can do business with. That's the whole message. And I feel like that is, this chapter is really a wonderful example of spiritual writing. He is a rock star of spirit.
Definitely.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to, and if you have questions, you can take the time and write them in the basket. It's 3:22. We're coming back at 3:40.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have 15 minutes.